God bless each one this evening. And before I start, I would just like to say thank you for your hospitality this weekend. It has been very special to be here. Sarah and I have enjoyed it immensely. And just this little short time, but we felt your love and desire to serve the Lord. And just thank you for your kindness to us. Raising children for God, for the church, for His kingdom. Oh, what a challenge. And I was blessed with the children up here tonight. And I wondered, well, maybe you don't really even need me to talk about it. I was blessed with the answers that somebody's teaching the children already. Somebody's reading stories. And I would just really like to emphasize to do that early. When the children are little, they shouldn't remember when... Well, one thing that our children should never remember is the first time they came to church, and they shouldn't remember the first time that mom read them a story. And keep them into books and keep them off the screen. If you want their brains to develop, and if you want them to grow to love the Lord, then read to them. Make the Bible practical in your home, and just have it where your home is a God-centered home, where the Bible is table talk. Not something that's just put on the shelf and you wait till Sunday to get ready for Sunday school or maybe have a topic, and other than that, it's, you know, just hurry scurry here and there. But I was blessed with some of the answers that those children were giving, and so keep up the good work. And I hope that this weekend nobody feels like I was chastising you, or you feel like it's a job just way over your head. But I just want it to be like just a little inspiration where you go home and say, yes, with God's help, we can do it. And if you need to make some adjustments, by all means, make those little adjustments. But I just want this to be like, I went to public school, and I'll say they had pep rallies before the ball games on Friday afternoon. Some of us just didn't go to the pep rallies. But I hope this can be a little like a pep rally. Go home and just do what God's called you to do. And, yeah, children, just learn to do what you need to do. And work isn't always fun, but it's rewarding. When we work the work of the Lord, it's very rewarding. And life is hard, isn't it? And if you don't do right, life is really hard. So we have to choose our hard. And I just read over that recently about things being hard. But we have to choose our hard. There's no way to just go through life with an easy life and float through and think that everything is going to be fun and games. It's going to be work to make it through life. Well, talking about raising families, children for the Lord, I'm just going to start to say that I'm almost hesitant to speak on this subject, because I can tell you that we don't have all success stories in our house. Our children have grown up, and some of them are serving the Lord, and we're so grateful, and some of them have not made decisions that we wish they would have. And so I don't want to be up here and you think that I'm coming across like I have all the answers and I've done everything right, because we haven't. And some of that, I guess some of the frustrations of life, we do the best we can, and we put our heart and soul into it, and our children grow up, and they have to make decisions. And God doesn't have any grandchildren, and they have to decide what they have to decide. And sometimes there are influences even from ingrown children, and we wonder, why did you make the decisions you did? I say all that to say, we need God the whole way through. And if you think your job as parents kind of lessens and slackens and goes away as you get older, it changes a lot. But that burden is still there, even when you get older and you have children grown and you have grandchildren and you have great-grandchildren. So bear with me tonight. I want to talk about a lot of practical things in trying to raise our families for the Lord and for God. And hopefully they'll choose right all their life and serve God and just be faithful all the way to the end. Think about the children that you have on your laps or by your side. Fast forward 15 years, where do you want them to be? And time goes so fast, and whose responsibility will it be to get them there? Will it happen by accident, or will it take planning and time and effort? We have to put something into it to get them to where you want to be. Psalm 58:3 says, they go astray as soon as they are born, and our responsibility is to turn them around. I remember my brother-in-law, Steve Ebersole, saying years ago that children are born with both feet going straight to hell. And that almost startled me. But who taught your children to kick and scream and holler and yell and tell lies and all that stuff? They came all wired for it, didn't they? And it's up to us to turn their feet around. They go astray as soon as they're born. And remember, these are eternal souls that did not ask to be born. They didn't ask to be born, brought into the world. So dads, I beg you tonight again to get a vision of what you have. These children are precious gifts from God, and it takes vision, it takes commitment, and it takes making the children a priority in your life. It can't be done on your spare time. And no amount of material gain substitutes for time from a godly father. One of our children told us recently that, and of course they're grown children with children, and they said that children spell love this way, T-I-M-E. That's the way children spell love. That's what they think of love when parents can take time with them. Be like Abraham, Genesis 18:1, who sat in the door of his tent at noontime. He was in the door of his tent, and God said, I know Abraham. Just a couple verses down, said, he will command his children after him. And the very next chapter, 19, Lot sat in the gates of the city, and he became the father of the Edomites. I think Abram at that time was a man that tried to get home. Evidently, Lot was a man that tried to get away and do other things. So I say deadbeat dads find reasons to leave the house and the children to mom. And dads with a vision look for ways to get home and take the children along when he goes. And being with the family. And dads must be the leader. And dads must lead out in family worship. If you want children that are going to be raised to live for God and embrace what we think is precious, and be men and women that are builders in the church, then it's going to have to be real in our lives when we're at home. Right now, when you take these children home, it must be real to be a Christian. I think I've seen families that it seemed like there was so much strife, internal strife and bitterness with authorities. And I wondered, what would be the attraction for a child growing up to come into a church like that? What would be the attraction if there was nothing attractive in the home? And so we must keep Christ first in our life, dads and moms. So dads, take time. Notice the children. They need to know that they are special. When they come and talk, listen to them. Build relationships with your children. I think that the children should be happy when you come home from work. And it should be evident that your children are, I'm talking about little children. And it has to start, so much of what I'm going to say tonight is a foundation. And I feel like that's all we've done this weekend, is just build on some foundations. But children should be glad to see dad come home. And dad should be the hero in a small child's eyes. And they should love their dad. We had a 3-year-old grandson. It's been a number of years back. But he told his dad at the end of the day, they'd had a good day together. He said, Dad, and he was 3 years old. He said, Dad, I'm going to love you forever, even when you're down in the ground. That was just as broad as that little 3-year-old could think of it. And dads, love your children's mother. Moms, respect your children's father. And we talked about some of that stuff this morning. But I believe that your love and respect for each other is one of the greatest keys to a godly home. Your input will impact the children's future and have a large bearing on eternity. So husbands and wives, be united in spirit. Commit to work together. Moms and dad, commit to work together to train the children. I thought of Judges 13 when the angel came to Manoah. And they wondered, how shall we order the child? How shall we train the child? And this should be the burden of our hearts, even before the child is born, when it's in the womb of its mother. I think there should be a descending burden on mom and dad. Here's another soul coming. How can we train this child to bring them up for God? I'd like to read a few scriptures. Proverbs, I'm jumping around, and I have them written here, so if you don't want to turn to them, I understand. Just follow along in your mind, please. Proverbs 13:24 says, "He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him." King James says, "betimes." ESV says, "promptly." A lot of lessons there. Proverbs 22:15, "Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him." Our culture today is so far away from this principle. And some of my sons talk about the candy culture that we live in today. You know what it means, the candy culture? Instead of just demanding that we have just simple, plain obedience because it's the right thing to do, you have to, you know, give candy if they do good. You know, if you do bad, you only get one piece. If you do good, well, you can get two pieces even. Stay away from the candy culture. It's not biblical. It's okay to give rewards. Don't get me wrong on that. But you're still going to need the rod of correction to drive that foolishness away. Proverbs 23, "Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with the rod, he will not die." And that rod, there's an instrument of correction. It's not like a big heavy rod or something that we might think about in our terms today. If you strike him, you will save his soul from hell. Proverbs 29:15, "The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother." Now these verses, if you've noticed, they're not in harmony with postmodern psychological parenting. PPP, as we'll abbreviate it, came along about the time that modern man invented ways for birth control, which usually at the bottom of the list of reasons for not wanting children is selfishness. The term birth control was popularized only 100 years ago. And it was brought about by a lady named Margaret Sanger, and she was an American activist for birth control. She opened the first birth control clinic in the United States in 1916. She was jailed for distributing information on contraception, but she was an activist, and she met with Gregory Pincus in 1951, and that was only a couple of years, 4 years before I was born, who was a doctor endocrinologist, to encourage him to make a pill that would prevent childbirth. Well, they needed one more person. They had the activist, and they had the doctor, and then they needed the money, so they got Catherine McCormick. Was the money behind it. She gave $40,000 back then, lots and lots of money. She was the heir to the McCormick Harvester fortune from Illinois. By 1954, there were large tests in Puerto Rico where there were no laws prohibiting birth control, and it worked, and the side effects were ignored. By 1960, when I was only 5 years old, the FDA approved it in the United States. And by 2010, there were 11,000 lawsuits against the Bayer Corporation for health issues caused by this pill. Now, since then, there's a whole lot of other ways of birth control, keeping babies from being born. And I'd say the church has been painfully silent on the issue. I remember growing up And somebody asked, and some of us Mennonite boys, oh, what does your church? Because at that time we kept hearing that the Catholic Church doesn't believe in it. And I kept wondering as a youngster, well, they don't believe in it, but I don't see big families. There were some from years earlier, you would still see them. But we became painfully silent on it. And when we become silent on something, somebody else is going to do the teaching. So if you think I'm speaking too plain tonight, you're welcome to come give me pushback afterward. But if we don't teach it, who will? But I want to remind you that life begins at conception, and anything that terminates life is abortion. I think it amazing, and I kind of enjoy putting things together in history and kind of seeing how things went. But I think it's amazing that at the same time antibiotics came along to cure the dreaded diseases of loose living, a pill was available to do away with the consequences, and man could pursue the pleasure of sin without the responsibilities. I remember as a young lad yet, and hearing people talk about the dreaded venereal diseases. But as I grew, that talk just faded and faded, and what a restraint it had been earlier. And as a result of that, morality rapidly fell. And introduced the 60s, and well, there was Elvis Presley in the late 50s. There was the Beatles in the 60s. And I told you I went to school, and we kept hearing about this all the time. George, Paul, Ringo, and John, they were the Beatles from England, and they introduced, it was just rebellion against constituted authority. And at this same time, now this was in the 60s, at the same time was the hippie movement. It was the same time period that prayer and Bible reading were taken out of the public schools, 1962 and 63. Supreme Court ruled Bible reading and prayer out. We lived down there in the Bible Belt, and it was about 5-6 years later. We still had devotion in school, in public school, until I was through the sixth or the seventh grade. The teacher would get the students to take turn reading the Bible. Public school. But this is the way the winds were blowing in society. Like I mentioned about the hippie movement, and when it was all about free love and psychedelic colors. And it was 1970 when the no-fault divorce was passed in California. Before that, they tell us that it was just about ugly to get a divorce because you had to prove in court how bad your wife was, and it would get so nasty and ugly, and it was a real deterrent. Well, 1970, California passed the no fault. If you wanted it, you could get it, a divorce. And some of you historians, you remember who was the governor of California in 1970? It was the man that was elected president of the United States in 1980. Anybody remember? Ronald Reagan. And I remember when he was elected, I almost said ordained. When he was elected president, there was a Baptist friend of mine that said, I don't know if he should be president or not. This is the first divorced man that will be president of the United States. Do you see where we are by now? Oh my, but do you see the slide? And by in 1973, is when abortions were legalized nationwide, and 2015, same-sex marriage is legalized. And today in society, children are basically unwanted and seen as a burden. Many times in our society, the animals, the pets, the dogs, whatever they are seem to be of higher importance. Do you know, and I checked it out a while back, and I didn't check out for 2024, you can tell I'm behind times, 2024. But just real recently in the history of this country, there are more pet strollers being sold than baby strollers. And if anything gets on my nerves, go to the airport and see somebody pushing that little dog in a stroller. Somehow it just doesn't seem right. Not even supposed to call them pets anymore. They're companions. China and Japan tried taking things in their hands back in the 80s. And limiting the number of children. And you know how that worked out. It didn't work out. And now that the population is on a decline, and they're offering rewards, incentives, tax breaks, payments to women to have babies, And the women have learned that babies are hard work. Don't want them. They've had a taste of the selfishness of self-life. Don't want them. And they don't know what they're going to do because the workforce is getting old and the young generation isn't there. I'm just telling you, any time that we get away from God and the way He has planned things, we never know where it's going to go, how far downhill it's going to go, but we know it's the wrong way. And I believe that every ordinance that God instituted creation is under attack by the devil today. Man and a woman, husband and wife, home, family, worship of God, the day of rest. And the farther man gets from God, the more he tries to do away with these ordinances. It's time we sit up. It's time we stand up and we take the Word of God and we make it real in our hearts and in our homes and we teach it to our children with a passion. Not nonchalant and hope that they catch it between Sunday school and the schoolroom, they'll catch on. Dads, it's going to take more than that. Many parents brought up during the 30s and the 40s. My parents, Sarah's parents, both were raised during the Depression. And thank God they didn't take the easy way out. But there are many parents that came up in those hard times and they decided, we don't want our children to have hard times. They learned how to limit the number of children they had. They learned how to make money. Both mom and dad go to work, get a good income, and give Shorty everything that he wanted. And you know what happened? Usually they turned out to be spoiled and many times irresponsible. Well, our goal is to have children grow to be well-balanced, emotionally stable, mature adults, and what will it take? And I'm going to try to keep moving along, but it's going to take love, teaching, training, and discipline. And I'd like to think of that as train cars. You see a train going down the track and they're hooked together. Well, this train, it has an engine on it, and mom and dad, you're the engine. And you're going to need to love, you're going to need to teach, you're going to need to train, and you're going to need discipline. And if you cut loose one of the cars, you're not going to get what you need to get, and it won't happen what you want to happen with your children. And I'm going to tell you that this new thing called gentle parenting, it's not the Bible way and it's not going to work. We have to get back. I told you, I think I mentioned last evening about what Simon Schrock wrote in his book about the winds that blow in society usually move the curtains in the church. And I believe we're being affected by postmodern psychological parenting and gentle parenting. I don't mean that we need to be rough and ugly. Bear with me because I want to get into that. But we need to be kind and we need to be firm. We need to mean what we say and say what we mean. And all the security that brings in home. But all of these things, these four things, love, teaching, training, and discipline, need to be coupled together. And to think about love, Proverbs 13:24, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. So this PPP has a false concept of love. And their idea of loving your children, modern man without God and the Bible as a foundation, they feel like your goal is to make the child happy. Is that your goal in life, to make your child happy constantly? Which requires, I call it the guessing game. If you're out to just make your child happy, then you're probably, the next thing is you'll do the guessing game. Like, oh, do you want to get up? Do you want to get down? Do you want Cheerios? Do you want milk? Do you want a cookie? Do you want all that, trying to find that one thing that's supposed to switch the flip where it satisfies that child. And I'm going to suggest, parents, that you be the leader. And you are old enough and mature enough by the time you get children that you know what they need and give them what they need and see to it that they accept what they need and don't stop until they are happy with what you choose for them. The other thing that the false concept of love is that love doesn't inflict pain. Is that true? No, it's not true. And I remember when I was young, I still remember going with my mom to the health department, and I think it was a smallpox vaccination, and I think I still have a little pock mark here where I got it. You got it too. So what was that? It hurt. But it's injecting a small amount of that germ. It's given while in a sterile, sound medical condition. A small amount of that smallpox to spare the big bad dose that you could get without it. Now, I know we're not talking vaccinations tonight. I'm talking about this was a real vaccination, and I remember back then that we didn't worry about polio anymore, and we didn't worry about smallpox, and we didn't worry about. But think of what I'm talking about here: given a small part of the ugly thing to save us from the real thing. Now, follow this way: since an undisciplined life is a very unpleasant experience, then discipline should be like that smallpox vaccination. A small amount of the real thing, a small amount of the painful infliction, administer under sound and loving family conditions to save them from the results of that undisciplined life that's going to reap havoc if it's not stopped. Let me ask you this, doesn't God work by inflicting pain? Does God love you so much that he just kind of paved your driveway and your road and all your days, you know, with all the flowers? No, God doesn't treat us like that. Where do we learn the hard things in life? Probably we learn the most from our most difficult things that we've faced is where we've learned the most important things to learn. Love, teaching, discipline, training, they're so closely together, it's hard just to talk about one. But love, what we call love without discipline, is a fiasco. If all we're going to do is just make that young and happy, it's going to be a fiasco. Harsh discipline without love will bring children who are emotionally unstable and unbalanced and give a wrong concept of God. And I want to tell you, that's usually not our problem these days. I remember when I was young, I could have told you about a number of homes where the dad was extremely harsh, where he was what I would have called a mean dad, and where he beat his children too much. That was a long time ago. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I don't know of any today who I feel like are extreme on that, where they use discipline way beyond what should be and beat their children. Now, I'm talking about our circles. I know it happens in the world where men get mad and they just lash out on children. I've seen that. And I think probably more of our problem today is moving over to the other side and taking too much of the gentle parenting, letting too many things just slide by like it doesn't matter. I think that's my little observation anyway. Obedience training is probably the most important part in reaching our goal. I emphasize again, your main goal is not to make your children happy. Stay with me. Your main goal is not to make them happy. Your main goal is not to please your children. And I want to say one more yet. Your main goal when you have little children is not to just be their friend. That's not your main goal. Your goal is to teach them cheerful obedience. Your goal is to teach them to be obedient. And then you're not finished until they have cheerful obedience. That's your goal. And when you do that, And when your children learn that you mean what you say and they are obedient, you don't need to worry about that friendship. That's coming down the road when you relate as more as adults, when your children are grown. That friendship will be there, but if you let them go and you don't, and you're just trying to please them, you're trying to make them happy, and you want to somehow get on their level and be their friend, they will never learn what it takes to really be a friend to mom and dad. They tell us children remember 10% of what they hear, 50% of what they see, 70% of what they said, and 90% of what they did. So I'm talking about obedience training. 90% of what they did, they remember. Intellectual training will not do it. If you can just talk and you can tell them, and how far will it get? And when you sit and reason with your little 2-year-old, 3-year-old, how far will you get, 4-year-old, 5-year-old? How far will you get? Yes, tell them that 10%. Let them see it in you, in the 50%. And then they will start repeating what they've heard and seen. And with loving discipline, you can train to do those necessary things. Obedience training. But when you're training for obedience, don't do it by screaming. Controlling your child by screaming will never do it. It's like trying to guide your car with the horn. Will not work. They need to know, your children, this is probably one of the most important things that I'm saying here tonight. Our children need to know that a quiet no is authoritative. In reality, it's more authoritative than a shouted, hollering no. They need to know that a quiet yes means exactly that. And a no means that. If you're trying to train by raising your voice, your child will learn quickly that you don't mean it the first time. I remember a number of years back picking up some dear community black children, and I enjoy going around picking them up. And I get a van load and taking them back home. By the end of the week, they were happy. They had had a good time, and they were hollering. They were loud in the car. And finally, I was like, this is just too much. And so I spoke. I said, children, nothing happened. And so the second time I raised it, I don't know how many decibels, louder, nothing happened. The third time, I went ahead and turned it up. I'm not going to demonstrate. But little Tracy was sitting behind me, and he said, Mr. Sim, is that the last time? I went, oh, wait a minute. I didn't think he heard me, but he knew it was 3 times. He had been trained. Somebody had trained him that when you, the third time you get loud, you holler, and then, oh, I guess I better wake up. I better do it. That's just training. It doesn't have to be that way. Don't teach obedience by the counting technique. It only teaches delayed obedience, and delayed obedience is not obedience. Another thing to watch is your tone. Listen to yourself. I thought about it illustrating with these boys, but I don't know if I should. But if I would... Are you Donaldson? No. What's your name? Kendrick. Yeah, if I would want to tell Kendrick something, and it's, I told you before, don't do that. How many times do I have to tell you? What would happen in Kendrick? There's several things would happen in him. He would sense my frustration, and it would build a frustration in him. And if I did that regular, you know how he would talk back to me? The same frustrated tone. Frustrated tones don't clear anybody of guilt. And they hurt. It doesn't feel good. None of us like to be talked to like that. And I think ideally I should just be able to say, Kendrick, And I don't even know what I want to tell you, but I can just tell you in a good way, you know, make sure you go clean up your room or whatever it is. I'm sure you do already. Watch the frustrated tones and don't use them. Obedience training does not dare to wait until you can reason with the child. Someone said that most babies are spoiled by 6 months. And I did notice in Honduras that babies were a lot more contented, babies out through the mountains, particular back, and especially back 20 years ago. And it's still a lot that way back in the mountains, but a lot more contented. Why? They didn't expect much. Their sibling that was a little bit older would carry them around. And they just knew that they weren't going to get much. And what happens when our babies squeak? And I'm not saying that we should neglect the babies or let them go to the point of neglect. And probably a lot of that did happen in third world countries. But when our babies squeak, we pretty much, somebody's going to be running, especially when you have a big family already and you have another little baby and somebody has to go get that baby. And pretty soon, it doesn't take long, that baby learns, squeak, somebody comes. They just learn it, right? And we can teach children, train them. They pull things off the coffee table. Maybe they're about 10 months old, or they pull things off the bookshelf. And then what do? Just clean the bookshelves off and push everything back, get it out of their reach, and we're pretty much teaching them that whatever they can reach, they can get. And then we child-proof our house instead of house-proof our child. But I know we got to be realistic in all that. But keep it up. Keep up the training. It takes time, consistency, and could I say a strong-willed parent? Because sometimes we get tired, don't we? I remember those days. But do things for the sake of training. Imagine an animal trainer that his only method, main method, was just telling the animal no. I enjoy watching some elephants give a show. And it was just amazing what all the trainer had them. But what if that trainer had only told them no to try to train them that way? It would have never worked. But we can tell the toddler to come. And why do you want him to come? Well, he doesn't know it, but you're giving him a test. Does he come? Does he obey? Does he come? And then when he comes, what? Well, if nothing else, just grab him and give him a big old hug. Tell him you love him and put him down and go. Let him go play or go play with him. But you've just given a little test. So the next time when they need to come, you know if they will or not. Training begins when connections are made. And when children are real little, they don't need hard spankings. And before they understand and the connections are made. And I think about a baby that's big enough to sit in a high chair, and you know, at first they just do their hands this way and whatever's on the tray goes. And a little bit later, when they knock their cup off and they look over to see where it went, and it's like, okay, there's some little connections being made. Or you give them a comb, and they go up to their hair. It's like, uh-oh, see? They're starting to put things together. And then at that stage, they're able to put together actions and consequences. They're able to start connecting that. Have sitting sessions with small children, teaching them they can be quiet in church without toys. And I say this is one of the beautiful benefits, dads and moms, for family devotion. If you have your children and just pretend you're sitting right here in church, and where the little shorties, they have to sit right there just like they're doing right now. We're having church. We just happen to be at home. Yeah, you little girls too. It's a good learning session. In other words, that is the lesson. And then when you come together for church, that's the test. And so what happens if you don't do good on a test? What do y'all do up here? If a child doesn't do good on a test, well, they need some more lessons, right? So that's a big plug for having family devotions. Oh, I should have mentioned too that obedience training doesn't include the distraction method. Postmodern psychological parenting reasons with the child, then uses the distraction method. I remember a young girl that stayed with us for at least a year and came back years later with a little baby, single mom, and she was all into the modern way of child raising, and it took the mom. She was busy, occupied at every waking moment of that little child, trying to distract her and satisfy her. And it didn't matter what the child did, you had to find something that the child wanted to do different to give up what they weren't supposed to do. And it just, I can't tell you how weary I got of it. In just a couple days, this old man just could not take that. And we will never get to where we want to go raising children if we want to use just the distraction method. So we use discipline. We use spankings. And so I want to talk about it a little bit. And I have my parents to thank for teaching me about this. But don't wait until the flashpoint before you discipline. The emotional stability in your home will be much better if the offenses are taken care of early, promptly, like we read about. If you take care of these offenses, don't let it build up and build up and build up until you get to a snapping point. Basically, our spanking should be done in private. Shopping is not a time to be spanking the children. Do training at home so you don't feel in a crisis at town. And if they get into trouble in town, you can just tell them that there will be discipline when you get home. Make sure they know the crime. When you take the child, the child is big enough, they know what they've done wrong. Make sure they know. You can ask them a little simple question: what did I tell you to do? And then, what did you do? And usually children are just so painfully honest. I disobeyed. I lied. They will just tell you. And then you can ask them, well, why am I going to spank you? And they'll tell you. And then administer the discipline soundly. We read a couple of those verses in Proverbs. It doesn't sound just like a little bit of fanfare. And I want to emphasize here the difference between abuse and discipline. Our society today does not know what real discipline is. Our society thinks of some parent waiting until the breaking point and getting mad and then lashing out on the child. And I'm saying that is not what we do. We must be in control of our emotions. Our parents were really firm on it, that if their emotions weren't right and they were human, and if my mother, we knew that if she was the least bit angry, and I don't know if I ever saw her angry, but anyway, she would not spank at that point. I had a brother that tried her out one time, said, Mom, are you sure you're not a little bit angry? It didn't work because she wasn't. But you must be in control of your spirit before you exercise discipline under sound, loving home conditions like we talked about earlier. And then, after you spank the child, sit down. Bind that child up. And I love that thought, because that's what God does to us. When you've been through the hard things in your life, does God tell you, okay, now you get going, you go on back and do your work, and I want you to behave? Job says, for he wounds, but he binds up. He shatters, but his hands heal. And I believe that after discipline, we need to bind up our children. I used to like to get them up on my knee when we after it would usually go to the bedroom, sit on the edge of the bed and get him up on my lap and let him sit there. And it hurt. And I let him cry for a little while. And you can tell the difference between a rebellious cry and a cry that is because it hurts. And after a while, the cry that because it hurts, it's time to stop. And you can just tell them. And maybe you wipe their tears. I like to give them a big old hug. Give them a kiss. Tell them to go wash your face and hands. Everything's taken care of. And you know what that does? It clears the guilt. They know it's taken care of. And I would say right along with that, you don't need to, I don't think it's good to get them to ask Jesus to forgive them because they didn't sin against Jesus. They're responsible to you. And so when you take care of it, and when the guilt is cleared, and you tell them, okay, it's over with, everything's okay, I love you, now go play, it's taken care of. And you know what that teaches them as they grow up? To keep their conscience clean. And so when they get to this point and they know that they're responsible to us, and when they do wrong, they know that Dad doesn't approve of it. But one day, isn't that what we want when children get up? And sometimes they've come really young and say, I want to be a Christian. Well, what, why? And I always wanted to wait until they realize that I am a sinner. Not that I just did something bad, I told a lie or I was disobedient or something like that. No, but when they realize that God touched my heart and I'm a sinner and I want my conscience clean, I want to be clear to the guilt. And then they're ready to do that because you've taught them from little up to keep their conscience clean. Oh my. One other thing that I wanted to just mention is that your obedience to God requires that every time you give your child a reasonable command in a normal voice, you need to see to it that it gets done. I have seen parents that would tell their children something, and I'll say, like, okay, go pick up the toys. And then Dad gets back to talking, and he's all intent. And little Shorty over there, he did everything except pick up the toys, but Dad was so busy he never noticed. So I'm going to say, if you're not ready to give a normal command in a normal tone, a reasonable command in a normal tone of voice, and see to it that it's carried out, don't say anything. Even if you have to get down and pick up the toys yourself, that's better than giving a command, turning away, and the youngster do whatever he wants to do. That's counterproductive training. You are not making little Christians. I don't know what you think about that. You're not making little Christians. You're just teaching them obedience and coming under authority. And how to keep a clean conscience. And that will make it so much easier when they come to the age of accountability to yield and submit to that authority that's over them. And if they have learned to say no to your authority, it will be much easier to resist God's authority. I'm trying to figure out what to close with and what to skip over. But I want to make sure that I tell you one more thing. Make bedtime a pleasant time. Make bedtime a pleasant time. Now, again, this, I mean, it can be for all ages. If you have... We have a 30-year-old at home yet. Our youngest son still lives at home. And it's pleasant at bedtime when we... Sometimes I wonder, well, why can't we get done talking and go to bed? But especially when your children are little and growing up. Because if you don't when they're little, you probably won't when you grow up. But make bedtime a pleasant time. It's an easy time to tell if all is well with the child. I think, too, it's a good time to look them in the eyes. Look your children in the eyes. Just pay attention to each one. And I mentioned that looking in the eyes this morning, and I want to just mention it here. But you don't have to wait until bedtime to look them in the eyes. It's another good time to do it at a meal, when you're sitting around the supper table in the evening. If you can let your work aside and your home, now you're with your family, your children, and you can look around at these olive plants that are sitting around your table and you look them in the eyes. It doesn't take a smart person to look somebody in the eyes and see if all is well. He's smiling at me. I think everything is okay. And when you sit there and you look at them and you can tell. And maybe it was just a troubled day at school. I remember my brother. If Brother Doug would have asked him what he didn't like, he had a bad one he would have put on there because he didn't like school. But I'm going to say we were in public school, and so we're going to excuse him on that. If you have a good Christian school, I'm glad nobody said they don't like school. But one day he was sitting at the table and he looked like he had lost his last friend, and I guess my dad must have looked at him and noticed it. And he said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I sat in school all day and only learned one thing." And my dad was like, "Well, what was that?" "I forgot." And so he had looked like he'd had a bad day. But I want to tell you, there are a lot more serious things than just a bad day at school. I've talked plain all weekend. I'm going to talk plain one more time, because it's a burden on my heart. It should be a burden on all of our hearts to protect our little children. Are you listening? And I know there have been children that abused from that tall, and they grow up, and later when they tell mom and dad said, "I never knew it." And I wonder if you're sitting at the table and you're looking in their eyes and you just see them and you notice each one. Do you know what it is to see a child that has troubled eyes and you know something is bad wrong? If you don't, we can go to Honduras again, where I've talked about their babies. And so many of them, the eyes are dark on their children. There's just a hollow and emptiness in there. And then all at once you see one, the eyes are bright, like some of these children here. And you just know that everything is clear. So I'm just telling you, look your children in the eyes. Well, yeah, I started out on making bedtime a pleasant time. It's bonding. They can tell you some little stories that happened to them during the day. And another thing, they go to sleep and it's sweet dreams and it's preparation for a good day tomorrow. Preparation for a good day tomorrow. Parents, children pick up our attitudes, and they're exposed and maybe even magnified by our children. Some attitudes that we have. So be careful. Our attitudes about, we could just list a number of things, about authority, about seat belts and car seats and speed limits and church leaders and school and governments and neighbors and ethnic groups and so many things. And so, parents, think about where you're going and the influence you're leaving on your children. What legacy are you leaving for your children to follow? And I want to close with this thought, that you can never lead where you're not walking yourself. You can never lead your children where you're not walking yourself. So I wish God's blessing on each of you. Keep up the good work. I believe you have hearts to raise your children for the Lord, and I just want to do all I can to encourage you in that. We're in a dark world. But you know, we have the brightest light to pierce this darkness with. And our homes are some of the greatest testimonies of the light of the gospel of Jesus, I mentioned this morning. And our children, I don't feel sorry for them, but I'm really concerned that we teach and train them and that your homes are havens for them where they can find, they can come back and find rest there. And if they're going to find rest there, dad and mom will have to find rest there as well. May God bless you and keep you. And thanks again. We love you and just count it a real privilege to have been with you this short time.